squat cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Weinberg, Cape Town, September the 17th, 4:30 p.m. St. Alfred's College for Boys, a gracious collection of ivy-covered buildings set in spacious playing fields and oak-lined avenues, is a colorful sight. It's a Saturday afternoon and the day of the annual school fete. Gaily striped marquees and chains of colored bunting frame the crowds of happy people now drifting homeward. In a downstairs office of the administration building sits Miss Sarah Timmins, the school secretary. To her has fallen the arduous task of counting the day's takings.
20, 40, 60, 80, 1 rand. Oh, well, the tombola certainly did well. That's 40 rand already, and I haven't started counting the notes yet. Now then, 20, 40. Oh, goodness, I mustn't lose my place. Headmaster's office?
Sarah, I thought I'd find you there. How long are you going to be?
Marty? Hello! Oh, ages, yes. I've just started counting the takings.
Oh, you're not going to be too late, are you, dear? Remember, we're having an early supper this evening.
Oh, of course, I hadn't forgotten, but there's still so much to do. Perhaps if you put something away for me.
Well, the fete was successful, then.
Oh, goodness, yes. We've done terribly well. You should just see all the money on my desk. There must be thousands and thousands of rands.
Oh, I'm glad I can't. All that money would give me a very strange feeling.
Marty, hold on a second, will you? I've locked myself in and there's someone at the door. I think it must be Dr. Bradley. I'll be back in a moment.
All right, dear.
Who is it?
Miss Timmins, I've got some more money for you from Dr. Bradley.
Oh, good. Oh, this is marvelous. I thought we had all the
inside
tables.
And shut up.
Who are you? You can't...
Get her inside. Close the door.
Right, honey. Come on, lady.
Dr. Edward Bradley, the headmaster of St. Alfred's College, is a tired but happy man as he strolls down an oak-lined avenue towards his office.
Splendid afternoon, Spencer. Absolutely splendid.
Yes, headmaster, it certainly was.
I thought we did well last year, but today it exceeded my wildest expectations. The lads worked like Trojans.
They did indeed, but their work isn't finished yet.
No, no, indeed it isn't. We must have the ground spick and span. You have a team of boarders working on that, I trust?
They're standing by, headmaster. As soon as the last guest leaves, I'll put them to work.
Excellent, excellent. It shouldn't take long if they put their backs into it.
Headmaster, where will you be if we need you?
Where will I be? In my study, of course. Got a lot to do there. All the takings to count and put away.
Well, surely you won't do that on your own.
Oh, goodness me, no. The very efficient Miss Timmins is in my office at this minute. I expect she'll have started counting the money already.
You're quite sure you won't need any help, sir?
Quite sure. No, Spencer, you've quite enough to do already. Off you go. Get the ground shipshape again.
Right to our headmaster. I'll come along to your study and let you know when I've finished.
Yes, yes, you do that. That's where I'll be, in the study.
Hey, Brian, get a move on, man. We haven't got all day.
Yeah, that's a lot, Barney. I can't see any more.
Right, let's get out of here.
What about the dame?
What about her?
Will she be all right? I mean, tied up like that.
Yeah, of course she'll be all right. Hey, you're comfortable enough, darling, aren't you? There you are. She says she's fine.
Hey, Fran, look at this phone.
What's the matter with it?
It's off the hook. Been sitting there like that all the time.
So? You must have knocked it off or something when you pushed the dame in here.
I didn't touch it. I swear I didn't. She was talking to someone. She must have been. The line's been open all this time.
Well, we'll soon fix that.
But funny, whoever it was on the other end, they heard us. They heard everything.
Yeah, too late to do anything about that now. Come on, let's get out of here. Well, don't just stand there. Make move.
Someone's coming.
What?
Down the corridor. Somebody's coming.
Back into the room, quick.
The window. We'll have to get out that way.
Oh, don't be an idiot. Look out there. It's a blind alley. A courtyard. Those walls are 10 feet high. No footholds. We'll never get over them in time.
But what are we going to do?
Behind the door. Quick. Have you got that knife?
Yeah, but...
If we get into trouble and you use it...
But Farley,
you do what I tell you, mate. Someone gives us any trouble, you stick them.
Oh, Mr. Timmins. Mr. Timmins, I thought I told you to lock the door. Miss Timmins.
Quick, Brian, get him.
That knife. No, no, you can't.
Funny, he's gone through the window.
The two young men stare in amazement as the slightly built old man vaults up the side of the high white wall, desperately scrabbles for a handhold, grips the summit, and pulls himself to safety. They stand undecided for a moment, and then sprint for the open door of the office.
Funny, did you see that? That old bloke went over.
Shut up and run, man. He's gone for the cops.
But who would have thought? I mean, when you said...
Will you shut up? Okay. Outside.
But can you manage the bag on your bike?
Look, we've worked it all out. It's going to be okay.
Nobody's watching.
Right, here are the bikes. Come on, Brian. What are you waiting for?
This dress coat thing. I can't ride the bike with this thing on and carry the bag.
Look, get rid of it, man.
Yeah, as he says. Easier said than... Well, that's it. Just throw it over there. Right, let's go.
The two powerful motorcycles speed off in a shower of gravel. Farney Barnard in the lead, still wearing a blue denim dust coat, reaches the tall white gateway and leans his machine well over as it screams onto the busy main road. Brian Daly is only seconds behind him. Neither of them looks back to see the crumpled pile of blue denim lying beneath the oak trees. p.m. In the charge office of Weinberg Police Station, Constable Darby Fenter, only minutes on duty, tidies the top of the well-worn counter, neatly placing stamp pads, rubber stamps, and printed form books. He hears a clatter of steps and looks up to the open doorway.
Yes, madam, can I help you?
Quickly. You've got to go quickly. St. Alfred's School.
What's the trouble?
I don't know. Robbery, I think. Sarah Timmins was talking to me on the phone and I heard those men come in. She screamed. Shouted for help. I heard her.
St. Alfred's School, you say?
That's right. The headmaster's office. You must send someone there immediately.
Just a moment, madam. Hello, radio? Constable Fenter here, Weinberg Charge Office. A reported burglary at St. Alfred's School. Yeah, the headmaster's office. You will? Good, yes. Yes, thank you. Look, I'll phone a full report the moment I have it. There's a car on the way, madam.
Oh, thank you.
Now then, madam, can I have your name, please?
Watts. Mrs. Marie Watts. Sarah, she's the headmaster's secretary. She lives with us. My husband and myself.
Just a moment, please, madam. Now then, you were on the phone, you say?
Yes, that's right. I was talking to Sarah.
Please, I'll help to him.
Doctor Bradley!
School quickly, two men with
knives. Constable, this is Dr. Bradley from St. Alfred's, the headmaster.
Yes, that's right, in my study, two men with knives. Oh, please.
Sir, are you all right?
Constable, help me, he's fainted.
Within minutes of the dramatic events at the Weinberg Charge Office, Patrol Car 45 of the Peninsula Radio Division pulls to a halt outside Dr. Bradley's office. Sergeant Dick Thomas and his driver, Constable Walters, hurry inside to find a nearly hysterical Sarah Timmins gagged and tightly bound to an office chair. She is immediately released and calmed by the hastily summoned vice principal. Sergeant Thomas takes a statement from those present and calls the murder and robbery squad on his patrol car radio. A fast car bearing Lieutenant Gregory von der Heerfer and Sergeant von Sale turns onto DeVau Drive, speeds through the heavy Saturday evening traffic over Woodstock, Rondebosch, and down into Weinberg.
I know St. Alfred's well, sir. We used to be great rugby rivals. I've scored a lot of tries in that playing field.
Perhaps I should have brought someone else. You just might not be welcome.
Oh, I don't think they bear any grudges, sir. They're a great bunch of boys. Besides, they scored a lot of their own tries against us.
There's the gates over there.
Yes, sir. The headmaster's office should be down that avenue.
Yes, it is. There, you can see the patrol car still parked outside.
Right, sir. I'll pull up next to him.
Now, Miss Timmons, I realize you must still feel very shocked. But...
Well, I'm all right now.
They didn't hurt you?
Well, they were a good deal rougher than they need have been, but no, they didn't hurt me.
Good. Now, if you could give us a description of them, the sooner we put out a call for these men, the better chance we have of capturing them.
Well, there were two of them. Very young boys, hardly out of school, about 18, well, 19, I should think.
Yes.
I see a lot of boys here, and I'm a pretty good judge of ages.
Anything distinctive about their appearance?
Well, their hair was a good deal longer than most of the boys at this school.
Uh-huh.
The tall one, the one that seemed to be in charge, he was very dark, long, black, greasy hair. The other one who caught hold of me and pushed me into the room, he was paler. He had rather mousy hair and pale blue eyes.
What were they wearing?
Well, that's the strange thing.
Strange?
Yes, they both had on long denim dust coats. Blue, you know.
Yes, I know what you mean. But what was particularly strange about that?
Well, that's why the men, you see. A lot of our boys were wearing exactly the same sort of coat today. For the fete, you see.
I see.
The boys wear those coats for woodwork and metalwork classes. Some of the senior boys who helped put up the tents and flagpoles, they were wearing their blue coats, and when I saw them standing there in the dark of the corridor, I just thought they were schoolboys. I mean, they told me they'd been sent by Dr. Bradley, so naturally I let them in.
Yes, of course. They were armed, were they?
Oh, just one of them. The little one. He had a knife. A horrible long knife.
Sir, could you come out here a moment, please?
Coming, Sergeant. Well, thank you, Miss Timmons.
Oh, yes.
I think that'll be all for the moment. If I think of anything else, I'll get in touch with you. Well, Sergeant, have you found something?
Yes, sir. I don't know if it's worth anything, but we found these motorcycle tracks in the driveway. Look over here. You can tell by the marks that they pulled off in quite a hurry.
Yeah, they certainly did. What's that you have in your hand?
That's what I wanted you to see, sir. I found it down here near the tire marks. It's a dust coat, a blue denim dust coat.
Lieutenant von der Heerfer has had a busy weekend. After correlating all the available facts in the St. Alfred's College robbery, he puts out a general alert for two young men on motorbikes, answering to Sarah Timmons' description of the robbers. Plaster casts of the tire tracks are taken and analyzed. The blue denim dust jacket is carefully checked for clues and returned to his office. Now he once again finds himself in the study of Dr. Edward Bradley at St. Alfred's School. Behind the big oak desk sits a much calmer headmaster.
Is that the wall you climbed over, Dr. Bradley?
It most certainly is. I've been staring at it all morning. Quite fascinating. I've absolutely no idea how such a thing was possible.
All of 10 feet with no foot or handholds. That was quite an achievement.
The inter-school athletics meeting is only a matter of weeks away. Our sportsmaster tells me that he received a delegation of boys this morning suggesting that I replace our school champion in the high jump event. I told him that he'd need two thugs armed with knives to chase me over the bar.
I'm glad you can joke about it, Dr. Bradley.
Well, in retrospect, the situation is quite hilarious. Except for the stolen monies, of course. The boys are dreadfully upset that all their hard work has come to nothing.
Well, we may still recover a good percentage of the money. Dr. Bradley, I want you to think back to the moment you first saw the two boys.
Oh, horrible. That dreadful knife. There's something about cold steel. I think if it had been a gun, I might have tackled them.
I'm very glad you didn't. They must have been pretty desperate at that stage, capable of anything. Now then, your first impression of them?
Hippies.
Because of their long hair?
Goodness, no. A lot of my boys grow their hair. I don't approve, but one can't ignore the fashion of the times. I believe in a certain amount of personal freedom. Dogmatism is the death of initiative. And...
Yes, of course. Why do you dismiss them as hippies?
Well, they were dirty, careless, quite without personal discipline.
You're quite sure you haven't seen either of them before?
What do you mean?
Well, they couldn't have been pupils, past pupils of St. Alfred's.
Good gracious me, most certainly not.
You would recognize them if they had been?
I certainly would. No, I'd say those two boys could not have left school more than a year ago, two at the most. I know all my old boys, certainly boys as young as that.
I only ask because they seem to know about the school, know their way around, not forgetting the blue dust jackets they were wearing.
No, of course, they could have been at the school at some time.
But I thought you said, Dr.
Oh, no, Brady. Not as pupils, guests, you know, visiting sports teams, that sort of thing. We play host to many other schools during the year.
Yes, of course.
Well, it wouldn't have been difficult for them to know just what my boys wear, how to find my study.
I suppose not. Right, Doctor. Many thanks for giving me so much of your valuable time.
Time well spent, Lieutenant, if you find our money.
The Cape Town headquarters of the murder and robbery squad some hours later. Lieutenant Van der Heerpe is again reviewing the facts of the case with Sergeant Van Sale.
Well, there it is. Two boys aged about 19. Two motorcycles, make unknown. Two blue denim dust coats.
Yeah, one of which we have right here, sir.
And something in excess of 2,000 rand in silver and small notes. What would you say was our strongest lead so far?
The dust coat?
Correct. Pass it over here, will you? Yeah, thanks. Now then, Miss Timmons tells us that these coats are worn by all the senior boys at St. Alfred's. We've checked with the school, and as far as can be ascertained, none of their coats is missing.
Oh, sir, there's just one point. Now, I had a look at some of those St. Alfred's coats.
Yes, well?
Well, they all seem to be the same make. Shield brand.
Probably bought at the same shop.
I should think so, sir. That's just the point.
Oh, what is?
That coat you have there, sir.
Yes?
The one left by the robbers. It's not a Shield brand.
It isn't? You're quite right, it isn't. Peak Clothing Limited. So, not from the school at all. Well, that, of course, eliminates one avenue of investigation, but it doesn't make matters a great deal easier. Hello?
What is it, sir?
Now, that might be interesting. Whole series of laundry marks here.
Look. Yeah, it might tell us who it belongs to.
Might indeed. Now, if we can find a laundry who uses these marks, must be hundreds of laundries in the peninsula.
Assuming, of course, that our men come from the Western Cape.
I think we can be safe in assuming that.
I don't see why, sir.
The school, Sergeant. They knew about the school. At least one of them has been there before. Perhaps like you, to play rugby or something. They knew their way around, and they knew about the blue coats. Now, that laundry's in the Cape somewhere, and you've got to find it for me.
Sergeant Van Sale heaves a mental sigh as he picks up the rough blue garment. He knows only too well what an arduous task lies ahead of him. Back in his office, he draws up a list of laundries to cover. It fills two pages of close-typed foolscap. Meanwhile, the object of his search is a very unhappy young man. In a narrow, grimy back street in Woodstock, the two youths sit in a dark back bedroom. Two unmade beds fill most of the room. The rest is littered with tools, clothing, beer cans, and overflowing ashtrays.
What do you mean you left it there?
Yeah, but that's what you said, Fanny. I couldn't get on the bike with the dancing on. I shouted to you and you said, get rid of it. You did, Fanny, honestly.
Yeah, of course I said it. I didn't mean there, you fool. I didn't mean in the school grounds where the cops could find it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Fanny. It was all so quick. What with the old bloke jumping over the wall and everything. Oh, man, I was scared. I just wanted to get away. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, well, that's it, mate. That really is. You're on your own now.
What do you mean, Fanny?
I mean, I've had it. I'm going.
Hey, but you can't pull out. Not now. What about the money and everything?
Yeah, the money. I suppose you expect your share of it after all the mistakes you made.
I just did what you told me to, Fanny.
You know where I got those coats from?
I don't know. I just said the blokes at St. Alfred's wore blue coats at the time I was there before, and you said it was a good idea. I mean, like, we couldn't get proper school uniforms for the job. Those coats were a great idea, and I suppose you must have bought them or something.
No, mate. I didn't buy them. I nicked them.
Oh, that's all right, then I...
Only the cops will know it was me.
I don't understand.
Oh, you don't understand. You fool, you don't understand anything. Use your brains for just 1 second, will you? I pinched those coats from Evert Joubert's place.
I still don't...
Evert knows I left with them. He must do. The cops traced them to his place, and that old lady of his will put them onto me first thing.
Yeah, that's bad. But funny, how are they going to trace the coats to Joubert's? They haven't got the name or anything on them. Another thing, you've moved since you left them. That old lady of his doesn't have your address.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm still getting out. First thing next Monday, I take the train to Joburg. I'll bring the bike up in the guard's van. And then, old chum, what you do with your life's your business.
Good morning, madam. I'm from the police. The owner of the laundry next door tells me you might be able to identify this blue denim coat.
Yeah, yeah. I know that coat. It was stolen from us.
And you wouldn't have any idea who stole it?
I most certainly would, young Roscoe.
Who was it, Mrs. Joubert?
Barnard, that's who it was. Farnie Barnard. Used to work here as Evart's apprentice. He bought a bike through Evart and then he went. Just went. Took two of our coats, tools, I don't know what else. He hasn't even paid for the bike either.
Do you have his address, Mrs. Barnard?
If I had his address, Evart would have got his things back by now, wouldn't he?
Yes, yes, I suppose so. You must have a registration number for the bike, though.
Yes, he's got that. Probably change that if I know that young man. He's a bad lot. I'll give you the number. Hope you do find him. Maybe we'll get our things back. What do you want him for, anyway?
We think he's involved in an armed robbery.
Wouldn't surprise me at all, not that one. But Evart nearly caught him the other day.
What?
Saw him in Woodstock on the bike. But poor Evart was in his van. I think Barnard must have seen him because he ducked into a side street. By the time Ewart could turn into the street, Barnard disappeared.
Do you know the name of the street, madam?
A little cul-de-sac. What's its name? Watley, that's right. Watley Road.
A cul-de-sac called Watley Road, eh? Well done, Sergeant. That's the best lead we have.
No, I thought so, sir. This man, Joubert, chased him into a cul-de-sac and then he disappeared. It can only mean that...
That he lives there somewhere. Exactly. Right, Sergeant, we go looking in Watley Road.
Just a thought, sir. If we start a house-to-house search, we might frighten him away before we get there.
What do you suggest?
I'll ask around first. Not as a policeman, of course. Something else.
Yes, I've got it. Barnard, you say his name is?
That's right, sir.
Well, then, you can be an insurance agent. Tell them that Barnard's been left some money in someone else's policy. If they think he's likely to get money, they'll be only too happy to tell you where he is.
Lieutenant von Heerver is proved right. Insurance agent Fonsale receives the utmost cooperation from the residents of Watley Road. Yes, they know the boy, Barnard. He lives with his friend Brian Daly at number 26.
Number 26.
Oh, that's right, sir. That little place there at the end of the road.
Let's hope they're at home.
There's a light on in the back room, sir. And the neighbors said they lived at the back of the house.
Get here at the side. Let's go through here and straight round to the back. We don't want to give them any more chances than we have to. Yes, sir. Look there. New motorbikes parked at the back. You've got the number of Barnard's bike. Is that it?
The make looks right, yes.
Yes, yes.
That's his bike, all right, sir.
Right. Door into the back room. Doesn't look as if there's any other way out. You knock, Sergeant. I'll stand to one side just in case they make a dash for it.
All right, sir.
There's somebody there, sir. I heard him get up.
Yeah?
Barney Barnard?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm a police officer, and I want
police.
To...
Look out, sir! He's running for
it! No, you don't, Barnard! What do you any good to fight, boy?
I've got the other one, sir!
Right. Bring him out to the car. Go on, Barnard. Move.
Daly were charged with one count of armed robbery. In addition, Barnard was charged with three counts of theft. After questioning, both young men signed full confessions. Their room was carefully searched and all but some 200 rands of stolen money recovered. At their trial, the prosecution accepted pleas of guilty on all counts. Daly received a sentence of 2 years imprisonment, 18 months of which was suspended. Barnard went to prison for a total of 3 years.
the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of Squad Cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another dramatic story in our authentic South African police series, Squad Cars. Squad Cars is directed by Colin Fish and produced by David Goodman.
This week's edition of Squad Cars was brought to you by the Sundown Ranch Hotel and Lion Park. Two worlds in one.